So we've got two readings today. So the first reading is taken from Exodus 20, starting at verse 8 on page 78. And then we've got Matthew chapter 12, starting at verse 1. Exodus 20, starting at verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And the second reading is on page 977. Matthew chapter 12, starting at verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the cornfields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some ears of corn and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath." He answered, "Haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that the priests on Sabbath duty in the temple desecrate the Sabbath and yet are innocent? I tell you that something greater than the temple is here. If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Going on from that place, he went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus, they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" He said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." So he stretched it out, and it was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Brill. So I think a lot of people were here last week. If you weren't, let me just very briefly catch up on where we got to last week and a reminder for all the rest of us. Last week we took a zoomed out view of the Bible's theme of rest. We said it's a really important theme. And we saw that it's central to God's purposes for us. What we were made for, and what we've been saved for. We thought about how it's something that one day we will experience in full, true rest. But actually right now, even amidst the pressures and the burdens of life, Jesus says to his people, "Come to me and I will give you rest for your souls." A tangible thing, a real experience that we are invited into. And at its heart, we saw it is a relationship with Jesus. Jesus who says, "Come to me," not so that "come to me so I can give you something to take away and that's going to help you as you try and add it to your life out there, but "come to me and let knowing me, let life done with me be right at the heart of how you approach everything else." So we saw the biblical principle of rest, it's not just a nice sentiment. It's not even just an intellectual idea. It is a genuine offer to us. "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." But the very real issue that then raises, one, I imagine those of you in home groups probably talked about this week as you met, the very real issue this raises is that even as Christians, our day-to-day lived experience often lacks this rest. Jesus calls us to this life of contented joy and satisfaction in him. And yet so often we lived harried, stressful lives where Jesus features but isn't always central. Restlessness is part of our story. I know that to be true of my life, and I don't think I'm being presumptuous to say it's most likely true of yours as well. And so the very real and very important question arises, given the offer of this amazing rest is there, what can we do to help ourselves enter into it more fully and more consistently? It's something that's going to be so much to our benefit, so what can we do to benefit? It's not a question of, are we saved or not? Sometimes we might talk about kind of entering into God's rest as coming for salvation, and maybe that is the priority question for some here. But for most of us, as Christians, the question is, are we enjoying the sort of content and fruitful life that is intended to flow out from our salvation? Have we settled for a life where we're weighed down and burdened by worldly fears and priorities? Have we bought into a grin and bear it set of priorities, expectations? Are we missing out on the new life that Jesus won for us by his death and resurrection? Lots of different ways we could approach this question, but there's one practice that is at the forefront of how the Bible takes the big principle of rest, you know, what we were made for, what we were saved for, how it takes that big principle and brings it into our day-to-day lived experience. And it's the principle of Sabbath. I wonder what your instinctive reaction is to this concept of Sabbath. I think we often don't quite know what to do with it. For many, it's got quite big legalistic overtones. So perhaps we most associate Sabbath keeping with today with Orthodox Jewish communities, a strict adherence to not working on the Sabbath that kind of sometimes actually goes to the extent of having lights that are programmed to come on automatically so that you don't have to do the work of hitting the switch on the Sabbath. Sabbath in kind of quite a makes life quite complicated, if that's our view of it. And maybe you're old enough to have been quite invested in the Keep Sunday special campaigns of the 1980s. I'm afraid I wasn't old enough. But maybe you were old enough, you remember that, and yet actually, as you think back, that feels quite a long time ago now. And times have changed, and maybe so have your views and approach to Sabbath. However we've quite got here, Sabbath has become a marginal thing for many of us. Something we don't quite know what to do with. And even if we should be doing anything with it. And I think that's to our detriment, because as we take a step back and look at the Bible, we see that Sabbath has always been intended to be this huge gift of grace from God to us, to help us to enjoy his rest even in this fallen world and to live lives that are spiritually fruitful. In God's purposes, Sabbath has a key part in that. In our super hectic lives, where we live in a culture where more than one person actually this week has commented this to me, as we've been talking about last Sunday, have said it's considered virtuous, isn't it? When someone asks you, how are you doing? To say, oh yes, good, very busy. That is considered a good, virtuous thing, busyness. That's the culture we live in, a culture where we're going to just get sucked into life in the fast lane and can't get out of it. Well, maybe we need to rediscover the gracious intention that sits behind God's Sabbath commands. And we're going to start in the Old Testament, and then we're going to come through to what Jesus has to say about it, and then we're going to think really practically. So first, in the Old Testament, we see that Sabbath, Sabbath re-centers God's people on their Creator. So that's there. It's the heart of what God says as he gives the Ten Commandments to Moses to give to the people in Exodus. This is where the Sabbath command is introduced. And you'll see that in our reading, highlighted in blue, the reason for the Sabbath command is, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. God takes his people back to where it all began. Back to where we were last week. And you'll remember that this seventh day, it wasn't really supposed to come to an end. It was this life of rest and spiritual blessing with God. But when Adam and Eve were thrown out of the garden, well, they lost that life. For them, it was as if this kind of figurative ongoing seventh day did come to an end. And they lost everything that came with it. And yet here in Exodus, as God starts to again form a special people for himself, to live back in relationship with him, he establishes the Sabbath principle. Tied to the rhythm of creation itself. One day in seven to stop working and without distraction direct yourself to the Lord. In particular, notice to use that time to remember he alone is the creator. He alone deserves, therefore, our devotion. And as the kind of flip side to that, they, as it's given to them, are not fundamentally, they're not God. It's a blessing, actually, to be reminded of that, isn't it? Because we sometimes slip into thinking we are God. But as he takes them back to creation, it's just so obvious. God is eternal. Humans were made from dust. The life and value that we have as humans, made in his image, well, that's not anything that we've kind of come together with, but that is because God, the Creator, gave it to us. You see, Sabbath was given to help people to recommit to depending on God rather than on themselves. But looking back to creation wasn't the only thing that Sabbath was meant to do, because in the book of Deuteronomy, just a few books on in the Old Testament, we find the people about 40 years on. And they're finally about to enter the promised land. They're almost able to kind of taste that promise of this rest that they're going to get after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And as they're about to enter, God again reminds them of the Ten Commandments. And what he says is almost identical. It's the same Ten Commandments he's giving again, except that he gives a different an additional reason for observing the Sabbath. So here it is in Deuteronomy. He says much of the same stuff, but then look at the different reason in blue. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. You see, that is a different reason. The second thing we see is that Sabbath, it re-centers God's people on their Redeemer. It's given to help us celebrate God as our rescuer, to remind those people then that they were no longer slaves in Egypt under Pharaoh, but that they've been set free to live lives in line with what God calls them to, that they possess true freedom because of what God had done for them. Freedom to say, well, therefore that stuff can wait. Actually, God's in charge. I'm not enslaved to my task list or productivity. That's not the be-all and end-all. There is no taskmaster actually that's going to come and beat me up if I don't do something. I am actually freed up to rest in God and enjoy the simple pleasures that he gives me. See, the second reason is saying that you're not an enslaved people anymore. Actually, you're free. And you're free to live with God. So I hope you can see this kind of Old Testament command of Sabbath to stop working on this one day in seven. It came from a heart of grace from God. He wants to help his people. His desire is that they take time out to remember who he is, who it is they're in relation to, what he's done for them. One day in seven where they do that, because he knows that will flow out and it will have a transformative effect actually on their whole week, on how they walk with God every single day. Of course, tragically, this Sabbath provision, along with the rest of God's good law, it wasn't enough to keep the people living with God, even in the promised land. Actually, as you read through the Old Testament and you hear about all the failings of God's people, often a key description of them is Sabbath breakers. Not because that's kind of some even more heinous thing that they've done than anything else. In some ways, it seems less serious. But because it kind of summarizes their walk away from God. You know, their arrogance of abandoning even this wonderful gift from God. A gift that said, look, you could stop one day each week and you can trust me that it's going to be okay. A provision that was only ever intended to help them flourish, and yet they thought they knew better. So they became Sabbath breakers. So that's the Old Testament. What about the New? How does the new covenant shape our understanding of Sabbath? Well, I've been, you know, still thinking this through this week and still thinking through in terms of exactly how it lands. And people do land in slightly different places. But I think key for us is to realise how Jesus himself approached it. Jesus certainly got a lot of criticism for his approach to the Sabbath. He was accused of being a Sabbath breaker. But actually, as we read the Gospels, we see that isn't an accusation that sticks. Jesus wasn't a Sabbath breaker. He didn't ignore the Sabbath. He didn't do away with the Sabbath or just abolish it. But actually, Jesus came and fulfilled the Sabbath. I would argue he restored the Sabbath as a key way that we, his people, can take hold of God's rest and blessing in our week by week. In fact, did you notice where our New Testament reading came from? At Matthew 12, the very next passage from where we were last week, and Jesus' big invitation to come to him for rest. I don't think that's a coincidence. Jesus has this big invitation, come to me for rest. And then we're shown that the practice of Sabbath, rightly understood, can be a real help to us in doing exactly that. An important context for understanding Jesus as he interacts with the Pharisees over the Sabbath in the Gospels is that for them, Sabbath keeping has become very legalistic. They are kind of in the similar ballpark to the you can't switch on a light bulb. And if you do, we're going to really come and stamp down on you. And they're legalistic to the point where they are criticizing here, aren't they? Jesus for allowing his disciples to have a little snack on the Sabbath. And they're criticizing Jesus for healing someone on the Sabbath. All the while, what are they happy to do? Well, they're happy to go and call an emergency council meeting on the Sabbath, where they plot to kill Jesus. You see, Jesus isn't a Sabbath breaker. They're just hypocrites, and they've completely missed the point of what it's all about. But Jesus sets about showing us a better way. As he insists on healing this man that we heard about, well, he's putting up in lights for us the principle that Sabbath is made for us and for our flourishing, that it is a gift of grace. And then he goes even further, and in verse 8, I think this is really the heart of the matter. He says these words, "For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Now, I think it's an amazing statement, because I think it's a claim to divinity from Jesus. He's saying, look, I'm the one who gave you this gift of Sabbath for your good in the beginning. So listen to me as I tell you how to approach it. And it's also a claim by Jesus of ultimate fulfillment. He's saying, look, I am the one who your Sabbath observance is supposed to be all about. I am the one who your Sabbath observance is supposed to drive you to. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. He's connecting again the principle of rest at the end of chapter 11 with the practice of rest in our day-to-day here in chapter 12. I think, there we go, he's saying it's all about him helping us to embrace his rest. You see, he takes the Sabbath. He scrapes off all these kind of legalistic barnacles that have accumulated on it. And he says, this gift of grace is to help you come and enjoy resting me. And the early church, they knew they weren't under the law in the same way as Old Testament believers. But that didn't mean they just abandoned the Sabbath, because they listened to Jesus. They recognized that these principles that sat behind it were life-giving and were exactly what they needed. And so instead, with the early church, to mark Jesus's fulfillment of this special day, they started using the name the Lord's Day. And they shifted their observance from Saturday to Sunday, and from the seventh day in the week to the first day in the week, because that was Resurrection Day. And they made sure, though, that the rhythm of their week still helped them to celebrate and rest in all that Jesus had done for them. And so what of us? Will we make it a priority to bring this Sabbath principle into our lives? Well, I want to pose the question, can we afford not to? Can we afford just to ignore it? I don't think we can. It's important, isn't it, before we kind of set about thinking about what this looked like, I think to acknowledge that each of us has a unique set of circumstances and responsibilities that impact our weekly routines in very real ways. Some of those are things we just won't be able to do anything about. Some of them are things we might not be able to change straight away due to commitments that we've made, but actually maybe over time they can change. And some might be decisions that we need to repent of straight away and say, actually, no, I am going to try and do things differently. But we're under grace, not law. Jesus has died for us. He's washed us clean. This is about striving to listen to God about what is good for us, and then trying to build that into our weekly routine as best we can. But I think this all calls us to think about whether we too might observe a weekly Sabbath day. Not just a day where we prioritise leisure rather than work. That's kind of the modern concept of weekend, isn't it? 2 days where leisure is supposed to kind of be the priority rather than work. But a day where we teach our mind and our hearts a lesson by slowing right down, putting our attention on God, in the company of those that he's put alongside us, family and church family, all with the aim of cultivating that creation mindset. I'm not God. I can stop. The world won't fall apart. All in with the aim of cultivating that redemption mindset. I'm not enslaved to my diary or my work or my desires. Jesus has rescued me. You know, my identity is now found in him. He gives me this sense of identity. I've got nothing to prove. I'm not enslaved. I think in many ways, building on the wisdom of the early church, you know, Sunday is an obvious day for this, with the potential for this rest to be built around time gathered with the whole community of believers. But that would probably need quite a shift from how I imagine many of our Sundays go. And be honest with yourself, how often do you view church as, you know, the God slot in your weekend, your often very busy weekend? How often does even that slot feel pressured? And sometimes just, oh, it's another thing to do and to get to. You know, stressing about getting the kids ready on time. Or how you're going to make it work around all the other things that are on your to-do list. You know, how actually is going to church on Sunday afternoon going to impact on my readiness for work on Monday morning? And what I'm already thinking, and my mind's already going there. And so we arrive stressed. Maybe the service has already started. Our focus is elsewhere. Some weekends we don't make it at all because just other things are in the diary. Now remember, grace, not law. But if Sabbath is wonderful provision for us, I think honesty is helpful. And if we're not even making 2 hours for church a non-negotiable in our weekly diary, well, then we're a long way off, aren't we, I think, from benefiting from this vision of proper Sabbath rest as God invites us to. Meaning, I think, our hopes of escaping from the restless rat race of the wider world that we live in are pretty low. And now I'm saying this as someone who's not got this right. As someone who knows what it is like to have weighty things that make this seem impossible to implement. As someone all too aware of the voices that immediately go, but that's just not realistic for me because. But also as someone who knows that not doing this is detrimental. And it leads to being overwhelmed by the busyness. And it inhibits gospel fruitfulness. Now, for some, Sunday won't be possible as a full-day Sabbath. I know that. I know that for some of us, that's just not possible. You might have to think how you can protect these couple of hours in a Sunday afternoon as we gather together as the Lord's people, and then also have another time in the week where you prioritise that Sabbath rest. But recognising that our situations do vary, can I just paint a picture of what a Sunday given over to Sabbath rest could look like? No alarms, no looking at work emails, no life admin, only tasks that are life-giving are allowed. And so, for example, if you're stuck inside at a desk all week, well, then the idea of mowing the lawn or sweeping up the leaves might actually be a really attractive one. And if it is, well, do it. It's life-giving. But if it's just another thing that needs to be done, it can wait. In a world where we're so often just passing like ships in the night, well, time together is prioritised. No complicated itinerary, but maybe a walk to the coffee shop, a game you'll enjoy. I invite people over from church for lunch, maybe, but if cooking fancy meals is a stressful prospect for you, just go simple. Of course, you know, if you enjoy cooking 5-course Michelin kind of level meals, and that is life given to you, well, we'll go for it and invite me over. But I guess if you've got kids, you've got to work out how you do it with kids. If you haven't got kids, then maybe there's more space just to sit back and read and reflect. But as the noise and the distraction and the pressure is dialed down on that day, well, then suddenly there's space, isn't there, to talk about Jesus. Think and pray if you're on your own for some or part of that day. To pray with people before you come to church. To get here early, to stick around afterwards to chat. Now maybe you're serving. But actually, because you've had the rest of this day that's not been just so stressful, it's a little easier for that serving to come from a place of willingness and privilege rather than duty and reluctance. Maybe someone else, you notice, is really struggling and you're able to give them time and an ear that's actually listening. And the evening, you don't just get home and crash out, exhausted, dreading the next day. But you take some time before bed to reflect on and pray about what you've heard and commit the coming week into the Lord's hands. How does that sound? Even in the voices in your head are saying, but I've got this burden, this responsibility. I can't just lay down. Doesn't that kind of day feel like the sort of day that would help you as you carry that burden, as you fulfill that responsibility? And much more we could say, but I think the potential here is for this to be really transformative because of the culture we live in. How easy it is to get sucked into the restlessness of our world. It could be transformative for us as individuals and in families and for us as a whole church family together. a day that won't just be enjoyable in and of itself, but will also then impact our experience of the other 6 days as well. You know, as we arise early the next morning to commute into work, or we face the challenges of being at home with young kids, as we get to the evening, midweek, and we're tired, but then we know actually we do have to knock off a few of those pressing tasks that are on our to-do list. Or we get that phone call that just makes us sigh in despair. Our day of rest and recentering on Jesus, if we've had it, will help us to negotiate all those things through the week with a very real sense that Jesus is right there with us. That it's not just down to us to make it work. He's the powerful God, so we don't have to be. He's dealt with our sins, so we don't need to fear. He's gentle and lowly, so it's okay for us to be fragile and weak. We're going to pick this up in home groups in a week's time. Think about some other ways that we can bring Sabbath rest into the rest of our week. But for now, just a few moments just to pause and reflect, maybe to make a resolution. And then in a few moments, I'll draw us together and we're going to sing. Invite the musicians to come up, and we're going to finish our time together in here formally by singing "We Rest in You, Our Shield and Our Defender." So please stand.